File 37. The fact remains that nearly all attempts to exterminate a doctrine without having some spiritual basis of attack against it, and also to wipe out all the organizations it has created, have led in many cases to the very opposite being achieved, and that for the following reasons. When sheer force is used to combat the spread of a doctrine, then that force must be employed systematically and persistently. This means that the chances of success in the suppression of a doctrine lie only in the persistent and uniform application of the method chosen. The moment hesitation is shown, and periods of tolerance alternate with the application of force, the doctrine against which these measures are directed will not only recover strength, but every successive persecution will bring to its support new adherents who have been shocked by the oppressive methods employed. The old adherents will become more embittered, and their allegiance will thereby be strengthened. Therefore, when force is employed, success is dependent on the consistent manner in which it is used. This persistence, however, is nothing less than the product of definite spiritual convictions. Every form of force that is not supported by a spiritual backing will be always indecisive and uncertain. Such a force lacks the stability that can be found only in a Weltanschauung which has devoted champions. Such a force is the expression of the individual energies. Therefore, it is, from time to time, dependent on the change of persons in whose hands it is employed, and also on their characters and capacities. But there is something else to be said. Every Weltanschauung, whether religious or political, and it is sometimes difficult to say whether one ends and the other begins, fights not so much for the negative destruction of the opposing world of ideas as for the positive realization of its own ideas. Thus its struggle lies in attack rather than in defense. It has the advantage of knowing where its objective lies, as this objective represents the realization of its own ideas. Inversely, it is difficult to say when the negative aim for the destruction of a hostile doctrine is reached and secured. For this reason alone, a Weltanschauung which is of an aggressive character is more definite in plan and more powerful and decisive in action than a Weltanschauung which takes up a merely defensive attitude. If force be used to combat a spiritual power, that force remains a defensive measure only so long as the wielders of it are not the standard-bearers and apostles of a new spiritual doctrine. To sum up, the following must be borne in mind: that every attempt to combat a Weltanschauung by means of force will turn out futile in the end if the struggle fails to take the form of an offensive for the establishment of an entirely new spiritual order of things. It is only in the struggle between two Weltanschauungen that physical force, consistently and ruthlessly applied, will eventually turn the scales in its own favor. It was here that the fight against Marxism had hitherto failed. This was also the reason why Bismarck's anti-socialist legislation failed, and was bound to fail in the long run, despite everything. It lacked the basis of a new Weltanschauung, for whose development and extension the struggle might have been taken up. To say that the serving up of drivel about a so-called state authority or law and order was an adequate foundation for the spiritual driving force in a life-or-death struggle is only what one would expect to hear from the wiseacres in high official positions. It was because there were no adequate spiritual motives back of this offensive that Bismarck was compelled to hand over the administration of his socialist legislative measures to the judgment and approval of those circles which were themselves the product of the Marxist teaching. Thus, a very ludicrous state of affairs prevailed when the Iron Chancellor surrendered the fate of his struggle against Marxism to the goodwill of the bourgeois democracy. He left the goat to take care of the garden. But this was only the necessary result of the failure to find a fundamentally new Weltanschauung, which would attract devoted champions to its cause and could be established on the ground from which Marxism had been driven out. And thus, the result of the Bismarckian campaign was deplorable. During the World War, or at the beginning of it, were the conditions any different? Unfortunately, they were not. The more I then pondered over the necessity for a change in the attitude of the executive government towards social democracy as the incorporation of contemporary Marxism, the more I realized the want of a practical substitute for this doctrine. Supposing social democracy were overthrown, what had one to offer the masses in its stead? Not a single movement existed which promised any success in attracting vast numbers of workers who would now be more or less without leaders, and holding these workers in its train. It is nonsensical to imagine that the international fanatic who has just severed his connection with a class party would forthwith join a bourgeois party, or in other words, another class organization. For however unsatisfactory these various organizations may appear to be, it cannot be denied that bourgeois politicians look on the distinction between classes as a very important factor in social life, provided it does not turn out politically disadvantageous to them. If they deny this fact, they show themselves not only impudent, but also mendacious. Generally speaking, one should guard against considering the broad masses more stupid than they really are. In political matters, it frequently happens that feeling judges more correctly than intellect. But the opinion that this feeling on the part of the masses is sufficient proof of their stupid international attitude can be immediately and definitely refuted by the simple fact that pacifist democracy is no less fatuous, though it draws its supporters almost exclusively from bourgeois circles. As long as millions of citizens daily gulp down what the social democratic press tells them, it ill becomes the masters to joke at the expense of the comrades, for in the long run they all swallow the same hash, even though it be dished up with different spices. In both cases, the cook is one and the same, the Jew. One should be careful about contradicting established facts. It is an undeniable fact that the class question has nothing to do with questions concerning ideals, though that dope is administered at election time. Class arrogance among a large section of our people, as well as the prevailing tendency to look down on the manual labourer, are obvious facts and not the fancies of some daydreamer. Nevertheless, it only illustrates the mentality of our so-called intellectual circles, that they have not yet grasped the fact but circumstances which are capable of preventing the growth of such a plague as Marxism are certainly not capable of restoring what has been lost. The bourgeois parties, a name coined by themselves, will never again be able to win over and hold the proletarian masses in their train. That is because two worlds stand opposed to one another here, in part naturally and in part artificially divided. These two camps have one leading thought, and that is that they must fight one another. But in such a fight, the younger will come off victorious, and that is Marxism. In 1914, a fight against social democracy was indeed quite conceivable. But the lack of any practical substitute made it doubtful how long the fight could be kept up. In this respect, there was a gaping void. Long before the war, I was of the same opinion, and that was the reason why I could not decide to join any of the parties then existing. During the course of the World War, my conviction was still further confirmed by the manifest impossibility of fighting social democracy in anything like a thorough way, because for that purpose there should have been a movement that was something more than a mere parliamentary party, and there was none such. I frequently discussed that want with my intimate comrades, and it was then that I first conceived the idea of taking up political work later on. As I have often assured my friends, it was just this that induced me to become active on the public hustings after the war, in addition to my professional work. And I am sure that this decision was arrived at after much earnest thought.